Hey, it's Brian Curtis from The Ringer, and I want to tell you about the Press Box podcast. The Press Box is a podcast for anybody who likes news, whether it's about sports or politics or pop culture, and wants to understand how that news really gets made. We have new shows every Monday and Thursday. We have long interviews with everyone from John Krakauer to Joe Buck. Your social media feeds are bursting with information every day. Let us help you sort it out. Join us on the Press Box.
This episode is brought to you by Jiffy Lube. Cars can be a big investment, so it's important to take care of them. I once got a car that I started out with 25,000 miles on. I got it to over 200,000 miles because I took care of it. You know how you take care of a car? You take care of the maintenance, the oil, the brakes, all that stuff. And if you don't, you can have a car just completely fall apart. When your car needs maintenance, head to Jiffy Lube. They provide automotive excellence at speed. Get your oil changed, brakes checked, tons of other multi-care services. It's all done by expertly trained technicians who actually care about taking care of you and your car. Jiffy Lube, car more. To find coupons and start an instant online estimate, visit JiffyLube.com. This episode is brought to you by Cars.com. When you add your car to your garage on Cars.com, you'll unlock access to real-time insights into how much your car is worth. Plus, view its historical and projected value to decide when to sell. So when the time is right, you can secure an instant offer from a local dealership or sell it yourself on Cars.com. Start tracking your car's value with your garage on Cars.com.
Welcome to another episode of the Bakari Sellers Podcast. Today we have some dynamic storytellers, people who are just going to tell us about the projects that they're working on. But I'm excited about this show because we have Marshall Goldberg and Randy Farrell. How y'all doing today? How did y'all end up together on the same Zoom screen? I mean, y'all are working today for real, huh?
We play off each other well. And we decided it'd be better if we were in the same room than just on different places.
Understood. So my show is unique because we ask all of our guests the same first question. And we want us to walk us through the arc of their careers. And so, Marshall, you've done just about everything as a lawyer, filmmaker, author, and educator. And Randy, you're an award-winning storyteller, executive producer, director, and showrunner. I want each one of you all to walk us through the arc of your respective careers to the work you're doing now and how y'all ended up meeting each other. You like the odd couple.
We are.
Marshall, you go first.
Okay, well, after law school, I worked in the Senate in Washington and worked on the Voting Rights Act extension. And that was that ignited a lot of inspiration for me. Hmm. And at some point, I decided I wanted to write. And I thought storytelling was be a way of advancing that interest. And I wrote for 25 years on different television shows and eventually decided to teach storytelling to lawyers and combine my two careers. I did that at Stanford and Michigan. And then I never lost the interest in the justice system and in the voting rights system. And I came up with this idea of putting the audience in the shoes of indigent criminal defendants, and let's just see what it's like. And I thought, pretty simple idea, but took 5 years to find a place that would let me film the way I wanted to film. And, finally found Nashville. They agreed. And then it took another 3 years to sell it because I did a pilot for a week, and that was 30 minutes long. And then it took 3 years after this pilot that we really liked. I had a lot of experience in storytelling, but not that much experience at all in documentary filmmaking. My experience was on the scripted side. So I needed a partner. And there was Randy. And he came in and we just hit it off. And I joke with Randy a lot where his attitude was, okay, I get your vision. I see your vision. Now get the hell out of the way.
It's not quite like that, but
I'll kind of go
in reverse, Bakari. I think, you know, Marshall and Mike Tolan, who's another important person in this equation, you know, I met with them, I saw the pilot, and it was more of a question of how can you execute this? I think this specific series, we're taking an approach that, frankly, you don't see on television, you know, kind of an agendaless, let's be a fly on the wall, let's have our cameras see what happens. And what I tell people is, you know, if the justice system in Nashville was perfect, that's what we would have captured. It's clearly not perfect. There are a lot of people within the system trying to do good things, but our approach was always just from that North Star of, hey, let's bring our cameras in, let's meet people, let's see what their experiences are. And then just personal background, my journey to this point is kind of weird. I was an athlete, I was a baseball player, I injured myself in college. Luckily had a mother who was a teacher and I always stayed up on my studies, went to grad school on a whim for journalism, went to SC, and one of my professors there said, hey, you know, you probably aren't going to be a great reporter, but you're a great storyteller. And so, you know, I got into a documentary class and that was kind of the spark, you know, telling longer format stories. And I've been doing it ever since.
Specifically for you, Randy, you're what's called a showrunner. For people who don't know what a showrunner is or does, what is it and what is it about Justice USA that made you want to see this happen?
That's a funny question because I don't even know that a showrunner himself could describe that. I mean, a showrunner is basically somebody who's in charge of making sure things get done. That's the simplest way to put it. And for me, you know, this was a passion project first. I mean, if you meet Marshall, he's one of the most charismatic people I've ever met. And when we met for breakfast and he was just so amped up about it. And when you have people on your team like that, you get that way as well. And like you said, we feed off each other. And for me, it was like, okay, let's take a very honest look at the justice system. And I felt like we could execute it. I mean, it really was a simple premise. Like, what is it like to be in the shoes of somebody who's going through the criminal justice system? A lot of people can talk about it from a professorial standpoint, or here's what the research says, but it's very different to be in that circumstance.
Let me ask you this question. I mean, why? Why this type of story? What makes you think, why this type of story? Why now do you find this story to be important? And of all places, why the hell did you choose Nashville?
Well, on the first one, a lot of people talk about criminal justice reform, but very few people actually know what the system's like. Mm-hmm. And we wanted to take people inside and make them realize this is a very complicated world. You're talking about human beings. And looking at it just as a system is often a cop-out, you know, because some people will say, throw them in jail and forget about them. Other people say, nah, they've had tough lives, let them out on the street. It's much more complicated than that. As for why Nashville, the truth is no one else would let us film. Because what I wanted to do was film conversations between lawyers and clients. I wanted to have a DA who would say, okay, you can talk to this person and I won't go after anything they say to you. I won't go after as evidence anything you film. And we needed a sheriff who would let us roam around the jail pretty much wherever we wanted. And no one else would meet those conditions. And we were adamant those had to be the conditions.
And just to add to that, it's like, why not Nashville? I think, you know, people are like, you don't want to do Nashville. It's not that bad. You know, you want to do Chicago or you want to do somewhere else, but why not Nashville? It's a, you know, part of a state where they're trying to do a lot of progressive things, some of which work, some of which doesn't. But the thing that is important to remember about the system is that it's comprised of people. Mm-hmm. And the biggest thing about this documentary is that we wanted to show the humanity of everyone. So that's, you know, people who are incarcerated, judges, lawyers, you know, sheriff's deputies, the person who's locking these people up, like what are their experiences? And so why not Nashville? And I think in doing it in the approach that we have, especially in these divisive times, we wanted people to think for themselves. We didn't want to go in and say, hey, here's what you should think about criminal justice. It's like, no, here's this system. Here's these people. They may not look like you or have the same life experience, but you can understand what they're going through if we do it in a true and honest way.
Marshall, as I was preparing for this interview, one of the questions that I just, it came to the front of my mind is that you've been around either in policy roles or legal roles or criminal justice system for some time. And in doing Justice USA, were there moments where you encountered aspects of the criminal justice system that you felt had improved over time? Or was this a film where you felt like the system hadn't made much progress over the course of your career?
Great question. I think if I had to point to one area of progress, especially in Nashville, is an awareness that there are a lot of people in the system who are mentally ill and that the system isn't designed to deal with them. Now, there's a resource challenge that how do you address them? What happens after they leave incarceration? And it's woefully under-resourced. But I think over the years earlier, people didn't even make that distinction between the mentally ill and the mentally healthy.
I mean, I do a lot of work in the criminal justice system, a lot of work. One of my biggest cases right now is a young man who was having a psychotic break, and he ended up, they housed him in the special housing unit, which is the SHU, which is, you know.
For sure.
And they they left him there 11 days. He died from dehydration.
Right.
I mean, it's just those type of awful stories. Look, does this film spend much time, and this is what I love, and I'm sure you both love it too, but does it spend much time with state and local policymakers that help shape what happened? And if local leadership in Nashville or Governor Lee saw your film, what would you want them to take from it?
That's a deep question. I think, you know,
you're on the Bakari Sellers podcast, dude. NAACP.
Much respect. I think, you know, on a very, very local level, we have, you know, Judge Sheila Calloway. She's the elected juvenile court judge. We have the DA. We have the chief public defender. So we have some of those people who are on the front lines. Mm-hmm. In terms of statewide policymakers, we don't have those people in the program. But, you know, I think it is something where even the DA himself, Glenn Funk, says, you know, we need to hold a mirror to our system and see what it's like. And if we can do that, then I think we'll all learn something. So I think, you know, Governor Lee or anyone in Nashville or anyone in that political complex there in the state of Tennessee will learn something from watching this film. I absolutely think that. And I think, like I said before, the first thing is, you know, we really need to look at these people and some of the things that they're dealing with. Mental health is one thing. Addiction is another thing. And look, there are programs that they're trying to do there, and some of them are working well, and some of them need adjustments. And I think you can see some of that within the film.
Right. I would just add that there's no narrator. There are no experts in this whole series. It's just the audience is brought in, and they can make up their own minds. They can judge things for themselves. And I hope that elected officials wouldn't feel like they're walking into a trap or getting bombarded with anything. We want to be fair. That was the criterion, by the way. You know, a lot of people wonder, how was it that we got the DA, the public defender, and the sheriff in Nashville to cooperate? And the deal was, we'll show them the pilot, not for their approval, but if they think they've been treated fairly, then they would agree to participate in a series, because we shot for 7 months. And in the end, that's really all the officials wanted. They just wanted to be treated fairly. They didn't want it to be castigated or painted as villains. And they're not necessarily sympathetic accurately portrayed either. But I think that's what we would hope in the end an elected official would do, is look at the situation with, are we treating people fairly? Are we recognizing the humanity that's going on in the system? I mean, one of the things we come away with is that there's just such a waste with incarceration. And that becomes intolerable in the end, that you're talking about, you know, America has 5% of the world's population, 25% of the world's incarcerated population. And why? What do we hope to gain from incarceration? I think eventually you don't ask that question abstractly. You just begin to see the waste of humanity that is being put behind bars. And I'd hope that elected officials would confront that too.
This episode is brought to you by Atlassian. Atlassian software like Jira, Confluence, and Trello help power global collaboration for all teams so they can accomplish everything that's impossible alone. Because individually we're great, but together we're so much better. Learn how to unleash the potential of your team at Atlassian.com. Atlassian.com. Atlassian. Tap the banner or visit this episode's page to learn more. This episode is brought to you by Jiffy Lube. Cars can be a big investment, so it's important to take care of them. I once got a car that I started out with 25,000 miles on. I got it to over 200,000 miles because I took care of it. You know how you take care of a car? You take care of the maintenance, the oil, the brakes, all that stuff. And if you don't, you can have a car just completely fall apart. When your car needs maintenance, head to Jiffy Lube. They provide automotive excellence at speed. Get your oil changed, brakes checked, tons of other multi-care services. It's all done by expertly trained technicians who actually care about taking care of you and your car. Jiffy Lube, car more. To find coupons and start an instant online estimate, visit JiffyLube.com.
On May 10th, Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes is coming to IMAX and theaters everywhere.
What a wonderful day!
This summer, one movie event will reign.
It is our time.
They stole my village.
I know where they're taking your clan.
Bend for your king.
Never.
Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. Only in theaters May 10th. Tickets on sale now. Rated PG-13. Some material may be inappropriate for children under 13.
When you were dreaming this up, who did you believe would be the audience for this project?
Well, I'll take the simple approach first. I think the audience is honestly everyone. And I know that seems kind of, you know, like a vague answer, but it's actually the truth. And I think with our approach, that's what we were thinking about. I mean, a lot of times, especially in this day and age and in this media environment, people want you to skew a project a certain way. And we did not want to do that. We wanted to be able to say, here's the truth. That's our North Star. And here are these stories. And yes, there's some complicated stories. I mean, we have juveniles who are accused of murder. I mean, it does not get much more complicated than that. And we present them and we say to the audience, you've met this person, you see what they're going through in their incarcerated state. Now, what do you think about it? And what can you do? We wanted this to be a conversation starter and not a conversation ender, because we don't profess to have all the answers.
And, you know, let me just add one thing really quickly. I used to think in terms of policy and execution of policy, Bakari, but more and more, I feel like what you have to start with an open mind and the mindset of the audience. Otherwise, nothing's going to change. And so I really think on that initial fundamental level, it's to get people to remember that you're talking about human beings in this system. Then we can start talking about policy and implementation.
One of the things that you all did extremely well, and one of the things that this project makes me think of, the one word is access, like unfettered access to human beings, to structures, to systems, but unfettered access. So are there any other opportunities out there for another Nashville, anywhere you want to see? Is this something that you could take international and look around and kind of compare and contrast? Tell me what's next, because this, I don't feel like you can finish at Nashville.
Right. Well, I agree with you. And I'll just say, you know, we think that Justice USA is a proof of concept. And the way that we did this and the way that we approached it, we would hope that other cities and even internationally, people would see it and say, okay, they were really honest about it. And like you said, the access is what allows for that honesty. And I would hope that other places would allow the same access and allow themselves to have a mirror taken to their system. And I think it's an approach that, in especially in these times, you know, I keep mentioning that it's so hard to break through the silos. And I think our approach hopefully can do that. And then Marshall, whatever you were going to say.
Now, you know, it's so interesting you talk about access, because there's the physical access, being able to shoot in the jail and being able to talk to people who are incarcerated. But the key is to get people to open up. And that requires, you know, we filmed for 7 months and people trusted us. And I think that goes back to the theme of, you know, the humanity of the people we're covering. And I feel like if we could get the opportunity to shoot anywhere, we learned enough. We learned enough about how to gain the trust, keep the trust. And that is where the power of the documentary comes. It really is. And, you know, I think we could find a DA now, and maybe hopefully even a juvenile court judge who would let us film. But once we get in and we draw the people out, I think it makes for compelling viewing. Compelling.
Oh, it definitely makes for compelling viewing. A couple quick questions before I get you guys out of here. But what did you all learn from this piece? Like, I know you might have had some expectations, but what did you learn from this piece and even learn about yourselves?
Wow. I mean, I think for me, people have asked me that question. They're like, what did you learn about the system? And my answer is, you know, I really didn't learn about the system. I learned about people. I was surprised, honestly, about how much people within the system actually care. And I think a lot of the credit goes to the Nashville sheriff. His deputies all treated these people with humanity. I mean, this wasn't a circumstance where you saw anybody being, you know, abused. And I'm not saying that that isn't possible, but we didn't see it. And so I think I learned a lot about humanity. I mean, I think you walk into this knowing that incarceration is a life-altering circumstance. And I think we really saw that. And look, as Marshall said, we spent day in and day out with these people within the jails, inside the courts, and even outside. And you know, you do develop relationships with these people, you care about them. And it's evident to us, as it's evident on screen, that incarceration is a life altering experience, regardless of innocence or guilt. And so I think that's what I learned.
I think the biggest thing I learned, and it was kind of a reminder of something you learned years ago, but we had pictures of all the people we were following on a cork board and, you know, cards underneath what was happening with them. And at one point I said, wow, you know, this is amazing. I thought we'd have to get new people every 2 months. We spent the first 3 weekends in the jail recruiting people. And I thought, well, their stories will run out after 2 months and then we'll have to go back in. And their stories lasted for 7 months. And it was like, wow, aren't we lucky that we found this? And then it hit me that we could have found any 12 people, which is basically what we followed, any 12 people anytime in the world of incarceration. And if we followed them for 7 months, we'd have just as interesting set of stories. And that it was a reminder that everybody has an interesting story if you just spend time with them.
What's been the feedback? And that was a great segue. But what's been the feedback, particularly from, I don't mean the feedback from agents and, you know, people who My
wife.
Yeah. But what's the feedback from the people you follow?
It's so interesting. I heard from one person over the weekend who was a drug addict and a lot of things happened to her. And I was worried that it would trigger some bad thoughts on her part. And she felt like, she felt we did a great job and she was treated fairly and honestly. And she was very intimate in what she revealed to us about her past. That was great to hear. And then there were these parents of a drug addict who we followed. And we love these people because they were not only were honest and they shared with us, but they provide lessons for other parents who are going through the same thing. And that's why they said they did it, because they wanted other parents maybe to learn from their experience. And they were so pleased about that because they felt that too had happened. So, they felt people felt we treated them with respect and intimacy. That was great.
And even a step further, I mean, the DA said it was the most authentic representation of the justice system he'd ever seen. Mm-hmm. The juvenile court judge was extremely pleased with our, depictions of the things that the very, very insanely difficult decisions that she had to make. So I think, the stakeholders within the system were also, I think people were just blown away because, like I said, I know I've been saying this a lot, but our approach is just very different. It's true follow documentary. And so I think people were blown away with the access to humanity, system, everything. It's raw. It's, it's in your face. It's, you got to pay attention. It's one of these things we don't sugarcoat or over explain anything for the audience. You're in it with these people.
I just want to add one thing on that too, Bakari. In the sixth episode, the last of the six, we begin to explore alternatives. And, it would have been easy just to say, this is the system. It's, you have some good people trying, but it's overwhelming. But there are alternatives, and we explore that. And so it's not, there's hope. There are possibilities out there. And we present that to the audience too.
How can people watch Justice USA?
It's on Max. All six episodes are now available. And, you wouldn't think of criminal justice as being binge-worthy, but it's honestly very binge-worthy. It's a study in the human condition as it pertains to incarceration.
One of these questions, I had to frame it differently because I got in trouble. Well, I didn't. The person who was on my show got in trouble. But what are some of the other projects that you are working on that you two can actually talk about? Don't be on there getting fired from projects because you're talking about them too soon.
No, we put together a project, a presentation on something that's near and dear to both of us, and that is voting rights and voting suppression. And we wanted to do something that would go all the way through the 2024 election. And we've been to rural Georgia, Mississippi. Mm-hmm. And we wanted to not do it out of New York or DC or even Atlanta. We really wanted to see places where people are on the front lines affected by voter suppression. And we're committed. We've had trouble selling it, but this is the one we want to do next. Very much so.
Yeah.
How can people follow you both on social media?
MarshallMGoldberg.com is my website.
Yeah. And my website's under construction, but I'm on all the social media, LinkedIn, Instagram, Facebook. Easy to find.
Easy to find. Fellas, you guys are true storytellers. Great art that you all have touched. You've touched us all by shining a light where it needs to be shown. I guess that's the proper verbiage there. But Marshall and Randy, thank you so much for joining the Bakari Sellers podcast. I love you both.
Thank you, Bakari. Appreciate your time.
Thank you, Bakari.